Excuse me, these are our seats.
Pardon me?
You're probably new here. This is where my family always sits. So, you think maybe you could, sit somewhere else?
We're kind of settled in here.
Well, no problem. We'll help you move.
Look, we're staying. Maybe you could sit somewhere else.
But it's just...
Give it up, Hank. We'll have to sit in the back with the coffers.
And now I would like to welcome the newest members of Ireland First Methodist. Would the Smith family please stand up and accept our blessings? Oh, there you are, right down in front. And that is how Jesus taught us not to borrow...
What'd she say? I can't hear anything. Oh, great. Now the sun's going to bounce off that cross and it's going to hit me right in the eye. Dang it. It's just not right. I've been in the same place 12 years. I know God's up there and he knows I'm smack dab in the middle of the second pew.
That was really embarrassing at church this morning when you yelled out, "What?"
Reverend Stroop acted like that new family owned the place.
That's silly, Hank. Everybody knows our church is owned by General Electric himself.
So what do you do with the artichoke? Do you eat it?
Yeah, just not the furry part that looks like asbestos, honey.
If a fellow was looking for a new church, does anyone know a good one?
I got a great church! You're gonna love it!
My church is made out of steel.
You gotta be right with God to go to my church, honey. It's hardcore.
All right, everyone, break it up. Give the man some room.
Well, thank you, sir.
You're coming with me, boy. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus here. Get back, Satan. Get back there. Jesus, love and Jesus, man. Jesus, Jesus, promised land.
Ampararnos, salvanos, ten misericordia de nosotros y guárdanos. Oh, Dios, por tu gracia.
Señor, ten piedad.
Por Dios, Cristo.
Señor, ten piedad.
Por la Madre.
Day by day. Day by day.
Do you want a drink?
Yes, Bo Cephas, I am most definitely ready for some football.
Hey, Uncle Hank.
Scared the bejesus out of me, Lucky. I thought you were Peggy.
Monday night football's on Sunday now, too. Sweet. Say, aren't you supposed to be in church?
Hell, I'm fed up with church. My old one didn't pay any attention to me, and my new one won't leave me alone.
You need to get in touch with God, not church. You know what I mean?
Kind of.
Yep. I find that sometimes church just gets in the way.
Great to have you here this morning. We're going to talk about that day, how sometimes church actually gets in the way of God a bit. And my name's Kurt. We're wrapping up this series called My Bad Church Experience, and really excited that you're here today. I'm going to tell you in a few minutes about my really, really bad church experience. Before I do that, though, I want to tell you about my good church experience, all right? Because, there was a part of church that I actually enjoyed. I mean, growing up as a kid, I enjoyed church. I attended church. My dad was a pastor. We were in church all the time. And if I can be really honest, as a child, there wasn't really much that I didn't like about it. I mean, I loved the cookies that we got to eat. I loved, in junior high, how they brought us Krispy Kreme donuts. You could eat as many as you want along with that. Like, remember that orange concentrated juice from McDonald's? They sold a big gallon at a time. They'd pump us up with that, and they'd send us into this little room called Sunday School, all sugared up, and that was lots of fun. And, what was not to love about that? I loved church softball and church, basketball and vacation Bible school and go on retreats, and I love going on choir trips, even though I couldn't sing. They were lots of fun. And, I remember going to conventions. And, we go to conventions and we do all kinds of crazy, goofy things and goofed off, got in trouble some. Police were involved a few times. That was lots of fun. God definitely, used that experience in our lives. Youth rallies. I remember going to youth rallies. Youth kind of revivals, if you will. How many of you remember what a revival is? Anybody ever been to a revival? Oh, man, I can tell your excitement about that. So, if you've never been to a revival, it was like for church people. And they'd bring some speaker in from the outside, like another state, so they had really cool stories because you never heard them before. And basically they're talking to church people, and they kind of just talk to you about, you know, things like, are you sure you really believe? And I'm like, I thought I'd already decided that. But are you sure that you're sure that you believe? You know, kind of like, well, the devil even believes that Jesus is who he says he is. What about you? I mean, do you believe more than the devil? And before long, you're like, man, I'm not sure if I believe enough. And so, you know, but I'm like down front, you know, praying, filling out a card, rededicating my life to Jesus another year again. You know, we went through this every year. And some of you I know are laughing, at least inside. But listen, you probably had the same experience. Some of you, if you grew up in church, you probably had some of the same experiences. And just out of curiosity, just interested to know, how many of you, if you ever, you know, prayed the sinner's prayer, you know, Jesus, you know, forgive me, I'm a sinner, I want to receive your grace. How many of you have ever prayed that prayer more than one time because you just weren't sure the first time it stuck? Just out of curiosity. Yeah, that's what revivals were about. You just go over and over, going through the same thing. So you were spiritually insecure like I am, and you're like, oh, is it enough? Did I say it authentically? Did I say it enough? Did I use the right words? And I don't know that any of that matters. And of course, if you're Catholic, you're like, wow, that's really interesting. I was just born into it. You know, you're like, man, you went through a lot to actually get in. And of course, if you're Catholic, you had something cool going on. I was actually jealous of some of the stuff you had going on, because see, you could like fill up your sin bucket all week long, and then you could go on the weekend of the Mass and confess, and it was like dumping your bucket. And then you could like go out and do it all again, right? And you just fill it back up all week long, which, you know, in the Protestant church, we had something similar. We had what we called the 1 John 1:9 plan, which was, you know, where you'd fill your sin bucket up all week, and then you go and you're like, Jesus, you know, I want you to forgive me, because, you know, I know I shouldn't have, you know, filled this bucket up, but, you know, you said in the Bible that if, you know, if I confess to you, then you just wipe away my sin and forget all about it, and you're like, okay, so I'm going to go through that routine, and then, of course, before long, you know, you're like, God, I did it again. And God's like, what? And you're like, oh yeah, you don't remember. All right, never mind. We can move on. And I'm not exactly sure all that is correct theologically, but I know where that was going. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, if I can be honest, there was much of my church experience as a child that I really did love. And I'm very grateful. I really am very grateful for the upbringing that I had. And yet, you know, one of the interesting things is that as I got older, I began to see something in that I didn't see when I was in it. Meaning, you know, the challenge was this. We basically had a church culture that was designed for church people. And nobody said that out loud. Nobody actually, you know, promoted that. But it's like if you showed up at any of the churches that we were connected to in the movement, this Church of God movement we were a part of, then you're going to find the same songs being sung. You're going to find that people, you know, drink the same coffee. They wear, you know, kind of dress the same. They do potlucks the same. You know, you're going to find that they do communion the same. You know, they baptize the same. I mean, because we dunked people. I mean, we were like, we're really baptizing. They're getting all wet. You know, none of this sprinkling stuff. We're really, you know, they're having the full experience, and it's like there was this subculture within the culture of the church that was specifically designed for people who were church people, right? And before you start pointing your fingers at me, some of you are like, oh man, your church. Listen, if you went to church, you had the same experience, right? I mean, if you went to church growing up, you had a culture, you had a subculture. You sang some of the same songs. You did communion a certain way, baptized a certain way. You know, you dressed a certain way. You knew when to stand, when to sit, you know, which class to go to. I mean, you just naturally knew how the culture worked. In fact, for some of you, even if you haven't been in church for a while, maybe this is your first church experience in a long time, if you were to go back to that church you grew up in today, whether it's Presbyterian, Methodist, Church of God, whatever it might be, you would actually today potentially actually feel the same way about that experience as you did way back when you were a kid. Because in some ways you're going to be singing the same songs, and there's something comforting about that, something very reassuring. I mean, it's going to like take you back to getting out of the two-tone Pinto, you know, and walking into church back in the 70s or 60s or 80s, whatever it was. And, you know, there's things that you're going to do, experience, see the smells, you know, that are going to take you right back. And part of that makes you feel really good, but part of it's, you know, you're kind of like, man, I'm not sure about that. Because see, what happens is I don't even know that we intend to do it, but before long what happens is it becomes a church culture designed for church people, all right? And I'm not sure that's what God had in mind. And so here's the deal. you know, if none of this deal is true, all right, if none of this big God story, I mean, what God did in the world, if none of it really holds any weight, all right, then this is probably not a problem. I mean, if your idea of, you know, churches for people who don't have lake houses or churches for people whose kids don't make the travel baseball team, so you got all kinds of time on your weekend, so I guess we'll go to church, then this probably isn't a big deal, right? I mean, if your idea of church is like, you know, we don't have any friends, well, where are we going to go to meet friends? Well, let's go to church, I guess, right? I mean, we'll meet some good people there, and maybe you want to get married. You'll find somebody to marry at church. Maybe your mom of preschoolers, you're like, I'm looking for some moms with preschoolers to hang out with, or I'm just wanting this, you know, some people that believe the same things that I believe. If that's what church is about, then probably a church culture, there's no problem with this. But see, here's the thing. If God did something really big that was for everybody back in the first century, then Houston, man, we've got a problem. We've got a problem. I mean, if back in the first century, God did something that was so big that it was beyond just the Jews and the Gentiles and the Greeks, and it was beyond the people that lived in the Middle East, but this was actually something that was for everyone, that spanned cultures, that spanned time frames, that this was bigger than just for churched people, then this is a bit of a problem. See, if the church was given this message of reconciliation, which means that you and I, we can actually have a right standing, we can actually be good with God, if this is what the church was given, and you might say, well, you know, I mean, I'm not even in right standing with my wife right now. I'm not in right standing with my husband right now or my kids. But you can put your head on your pillow at night and you can sigh a sigh of relief and go, oh, yeah, but I'm good with God. Listen, this is a really big deal. All right, and so if this message was for everybody, all right, then the church ought to be for everybody. And if the message is for everybody, then the church culture should be designed not for church people, but it should be designed for everyone. Otherwise, this is a really big problem. So here's what I believe. And I think here's probably what many of us believe. Many of us believe that God did do something big in the first century, something big that was for everyone. You know, and it wasn't like he was just starting another religion. The world didn't need any more religions. I mean, there were plenty of them around. But that God actually emerged on the scene, did something really big for everyone, spoke through his son, Jesus, and he said, hey, you know what? Want to know what God's like? Listen, I'm about to reveal it. I'm about to solve the mystery. You want to know what God thinks about sin? I'm about to show you how much he cares about that. You want to know how much God loves you? I'm about to reveal that as well. Get ready. I'm going to show you what it looks like. And then he said to a handful of people, this message isn't just for the Jews. It's not just for the Gentiles. It's not for the Romans, just for the Greeks. It's not just for men, just for women, just for people who get the church culture. He said, this is a message for everyone. And so, you know, there's a guy we talk about around here a lot. His name's Paul. And we looked at Paul a couple weeks ago in the first week of this series. And Paul's interesting because the reason we talk about Paul so much is because he's somebody who's probably responsible for more of the New Testament than any other individual. So the New Testament part of the Bible, from Jesus' life on, he inked, he penned, he wrote probably more than any other individual in the entire New Testament. Now, the unique thing about Paul was that Paul originally was not named Paul. He was named Saul. And when he was named Saul, he actually wasn't a Jesus follower. He wasn't always in the church culture. You see, originally Saul, when he was known as Saul, he actually hated Christians. In fact, he would go around killing Christians. He would go around causing Christians to like blasphemy. He would go to people and he'd be like, hey, you know, I'm going to break your arm, I'm going to break your leg if you don't denounce the name of Jesus. So, I mean, he was out, you know, doing like stupid, cruel stuff to people who said they were Jesus followers. And then through this chain of events, he actually, you know, actually came into a relationship with Jesus. And then people like Matthew and Paul or Peter and Mark and all these guys, they began to become friends of his, and he began to hang with them, and see, those guys actually believed what they saw. See, they believed what they saw. And so, you know, so Paul, his name's changed from Saul to Paul, and he decides, you know, listen, the world needs to know about this. I mean, if this is a message that God really did do something big, then we can't just contain this here in Palestine. Everybody needs to know about this. So he goes out and he begins to share it with everyone. And as a part of that, he goes to this little church in Rome. Now, Rome was not a good place for Christians. I mean, they persecuted Christians in Rome. But this little church springs up in Rome. And so Paul actually writes this book called Romans to the church of Rome. And he's basically telling them, he's like saying, hey, you guys keep arguing. I mean, you're kind of like, they had this little like argument break out. And they're like, the Jews are like, well, you can't eat that food and be right with God. And the Gentiles are like, well, what are you talking about? I mean, we can eat whatever we want. You know, it's not about that anymore. And the Jews are like, well, you can't wear those clothes Jews and be right with God. And the Gentiles are like, no, we can do whatever we want. You know, those rules have changed. And Paul's, he's like, guys, listen, everything's changed. That's all over. There's no difference in that now. This something happened, and this message is now for everyone, regardless of your culture, regardless of your gender, regardless of where you were raised. In fact, here's how he says it in Romans chapter 3. This is Paul talking. He says, but now, meaning right now, something big has happened. Something is different that's going on. He says, now a righteousness. And whenever you see the word righteousness in the New Testament, this actually means right standing with God. That you can actually have a right, be in right standing with God. He says, but now a righteousness from God apart from the law has been made known. And so what this means is he's saying, hey, I know this is different. I know this isn't the way you grew up. I know things are different. You don't have to do all the rituals and routines you used to do. But listen, this has been talked about for a long time. We were wondering when it was going to come. Now it's on the scene. A righteousness from God is now apart from the law has been made known, to which the law and the prophets testify. He's saying, hey, it's happening. It's happening right now. And then he goes on. He says, this righteousness from God comes through faith in Jesus Christ to all who behave, right? Oh, what's that supposed to say? To all who believe. Yeah, the back row people get that one because they're like, oh, I hope it's not my behavior. You know, I hope that's not the way it was. No, he says to all who believe. Why would we put behave in there? Well, here's why. Because, you know, back in those days, everybody thought that the way you got right with God had to be based on your behavior, right? I mean, the Jews thought that, the Romans thought that, the Gentiles thought that. Let's be honest, people today think that, man, if you behave the right way, then you actually can have faith in Jesus. And Paul's saying, no, that's not the way it happens anymore. He's saying God's done something for everyone. God's leveled the playing field and put everyone in the same place. And so he says the righteousness from God comes through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. He says, hey, everybody gets in the same way now. It's not based on behavior. It's based on something bigger than that. And they're like, believe? Really? That's it? That's all we got to do? And he's like, that's it. And in case they didn't get that, he says there's no difference. He says, there's no difference. And they're like, well, now, Paul, listen, this is where you don't understand the way we do things around here. Have you noticed they don't sing the right songs? You can't honor God with those songs. I mean, have you noticed they don't take communion the right way? They dunk instead of sprinkle. And Paul's like, no, there's no difference. It doesn't matter anymore. They're like, but Paul, come on. I mean, have you ever been to one of their weddings? Come on. You know what I mean? And he's like, no, there's no difference. I mean, zero, not a zip and none. It's all the same now. And then he goes on. This is fascinating. Look at what he says next. He says, for all have sinned. And they're like, oh, so we're talking about sin now, huh? I mean, you know, so the common denominator isn't how we behave. The common denominator isn't, you know, that we do the right things when we approach God. It's not that we approach God in a certain way or wear the right clothes or eat the right foods or read the right book. There's plenty of differences when it comes to that. But God actually has done something for everyone, and it's something everyone needed. And Paul says, yes, and there's no difference. He says, we've all sinned, and all, I've actually added that word right there just to keep us on track, and all fall short of the glory of God. The Baptists, the Presbyterians, the Catholics, you know, your pastor, the priests, you know, the President of the United States, the moms, the dads. He says, everybody. He says, this is for everybody. All have sinned and all fall short of the glory of God. You know what glory means? Glory actually means prestige, greatness, splendor, radiance. He said, everybody's fallen short of the greatness of who God is. I've only missed one flight in my entire life. All right, I mean, we used to travel quite a bit, and I believe it was over Christmas break. We flew out of Louisville for some reason, and probably because it was cheaper. That's usually the reason I would drive somewhere to fly out of someplace else. So we were going to the Caribbean and had a vacation plan. It was kind of one of those like pre-mission trips, you know, where we're going to kind of vacation but check out how we can do missions. It was kind of one of those fun things, you know. And so we're traveling to Louisville, and I'm one of the guys who likes to be at the airport like. When I show up, I like to see that the plane before my plane is still not departed, right? I mean, there's still like another number on the boarding, you know, sign. And because of my flight number's on the sign, I feel like I'm late. And so, you know, we leave like 5 hours early to get to Louisville, right? I mean, I'm thinking 2 hours to drive there. We're giving ourselves 5 hours to drive. And, you know, sure enough, we hit traffic halfway down 65. I mean, it just is like gridlock. And, you know, we sit literally still for like an hour. You know, I'm thinking, all right, we got time. We planned ahead. We left. left early. You know, another like half hour passes, I'm starting to get nervous. We call the airport, you know, our flight is delayed. So we're like, man, we might make this thing. And I mean, we creep on down to Louisville. We you know, as soon as we can, we bolt into the airport. We're like running through, checking our stuff, running through security. We're literally running down the terminal to our place. We get on the plane and then you see the thing happen that you never want to see, right? I mean, the gate agent like slams the door and you're close enough that you can see it, right? And you're just like, oh no. And you know, it's like all slow motion and we're getting down there and she's back at the desk, you know, and you see something, you know, it's like got that window behind the agent's desk and you know what's sitting on the other side of that window? The plane, you know, and you're like, I need to be on that plane right there, you know. So I'm like explaining to her, like, if ma'am, is there any way that I could, like, my wife and I, you know, could you just open the door? She's like, I can't do that. And I'm like, we won't tell anybody. I mean, if you can just open it a little bit, we'll slide in. And, you know, we're kind of bartering with her, trying to get her to let us in. And in the meantime, you know, there's some other people that begin to show up. And like a guy comes running up with a backpack and, you know, he must have been in the same traffic. And, you know, and then there's a couple that comes running up with a stroller and the good thing is I was only like 45 seconds late, right? I mean, these people are like really late. They, some of them, you know, like 15 minutes later, there's like 20 of us standing there. And it's really, fortunately for Julie and I, we were only 45 seconds late. So guess who got to get on the plane? Nobody got to get on the plane, all right? I mean, we were all fell short of the glory of Delta, all right? I mean, no, you know, we were all late. I mean, you know, it didn't matter if you were 30 seconds late or 30 minutes late or if you were in the parking lot going, there goes my plane, you know? I mean, we were all left behind. And I think this is what the Apostle Paul was talking about here. He's saying to the whole world, there's no difference. It doesn't matter if you're 30 seconds bad or 30 minutes bad. It doesn't matter if you're a minute bad or an hour bad. It doesn't matter if the hourglass is still ticking on you bad, all right? The point is, there's no difference. We've all fallen short of the perfection, of the glory, of the radiance of God. And what's cool about this line right here is that Paul doesn't put a period right there, which means it continues. And he doesn't say but, he says and. Look at what he says. He says, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and all are justified. It's like he doesn't even skip a beat right there. Justified means you actually can have righteousness. You can have right standing with God. He says, and all are justified freely, because remember, it's not about behavior, it's a gift. It's about your belief. And he says, all are justified freely by his grace, which means it's a gift, it's not something you can earn. He says, all are justified freely by his grace through the redemption. The redemption is God's great big buyback program. It's kind of like you were sold into sin, and Jesus is standing there saying, hey, I want to buy you back. Here. Let me give you my card. It's like you got a redemption tag on your shoulder, and God says, I want to take all that stuff off your shoulder, and I want to buy you back. All are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. Paul's like, hey, don't tell me about the differences. Don't say things like, hey, did you see what songs they sing? Or hey, they don't take the offering right. He's like, listen, there are no differences. See, once upon a time, you were separated from God and you couldn't earn your way back in. You couldn't behave your way back into his good graces. We're all sinners. We all stand at the door, whether you're 30 seconds late or 30 minutes late. We've all done something, for all have sinned and all fall short of the glory of God. And then Paul goes on and he asks a question. It's an interesting question. He says, where then is boasting? He's like, hey, the Baptists, you Baptists, you guys have something to boast about? And they're like, no, we don't. How about you people from the Church of God movement? You got something that you feel like you could boast about? Well, no, not if we're talking about sin. I mean, we can talk about a lot of other things we do, but not, man, if it's sin, yeah, I can't boast about that. Catholics, no. Presbyterians, no. Buddhists, no. I mean, you know, does anybody have a personal justification? Like, I'm personally just good enough to stand before God? Nope. Paul's like, Well, why then? There's no boasting. And then look at his next line. I love this. He said, it is, check this out, it is excluded. In other words, we all got there after the gate was closed. He's saying we all got there at the counter, whether you're 45 seconds late or 45 minutes late, and the gate agent was standing there, and she closed the door, and it's like Jesus came and said, let them all in. I mean, none of them were here on time, but let them all in. I've bought back their flight. They can go. I mean, that's what Jesus is saying right there. That's what Paul's trying to get us to see. We're all equal when it comes to our sin. We all fall short. Now, here's the point. Because I know you're thinking, where in the world is he going with this? Here's the point. If the message of the church is for everybody, then the culture of the church shouldn't exclude anybody. I mean, we've all sinned. We've all fallen short. You know, we've all done, God has done something equally, so all of us have the chance to still get through the gate. And if God has done something unique for all of us, and this is our mission, this is the incredible good news, that's what gospel means, good news, then why would we intentionally or unintentionally create a church culture that makes people feel locked out? I mean, when Jesus invites everybody in. See, I love the way James says it. James is the brother of Jesus. Now, James is interesting because James didn't believe right away. All right, he actually came to his faith later. And, James did not really believe until after the resurrection because, you know, and you can understand that, right? I mean, James is the brother of Jesus, younger brother of Jesus. And imagine the conversations. Imagine the stories he could tell. All right, I mean, James talking to Jesus. Jesus, come on. I mean, are you really the son of gift of God to the world? Jesus is like, yeah, it is as they say. And James is like, come on. I mean, do you remember what we did when you were a kid? I mean, you can't do that and still be, you can get this, right? But see, here's the thing. When you see your brother die on a cross, and then a couple days later, you actually have a conversation with him, you believe. I mean, you might be like, I don't understand the teaching, but I'm with him. I've never seen this before, and he's my brother and everything, and I don't even get the parable, but man, I believe. I'm with him. He died, and he's back alive again. I believe. See, that's what it took for James to actually believe. And this is important because, see, James, very shortly after this, becomes a leader in the church. And this isn't like decades later. This isn't like, you know, like centuries later, kind of like the normal church works. We got to test you out for 20 years and see if your leadership quality. You know, no. It's like a couple weeks later. You know, James is put in a leadership position, and there's this argument that breaks out again. And they're arguing over who's doing it right and who's doing it wrong and who should be in the church, who should not be in the church. And James, you know, he just says this. In fact, I have this phrase in my office. I look at it all the time. This is what he says right here. He says, it is my judgment, therefore, that we should not make it difficult. And what he's saying, he's like, hey, I get I'm late. I was the one that was late to the party. I get that I was the one that just kind of began to believe based on seeing my brother rise from the dead. But he said, I just think that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. See, this is only like 20 years after the church started. He said, I think it would be really a bad thing for us to stiff arm people and make them feel like this is not a place for them. I think it'd be a really bad thing. See, this isn't centuries later. This is a couple decades after the church started. They're having this problem. They're like, we shouldn't have so many traditions that it actually makes somebody walk in and feel like they don't know what to do. Somebody say, man, I don't even know what they believe because I can't even figure out when to stand and sit and when, you know, how to act when I go here. I mean, James just says, hey, I've come to the conclusion. I think it would be a good thing not to make it difficult for people who are trying to come to faith. So I share all of that with you as the backdrop to tell you about my really bad church experience. So a few years ago, serving in a church, not this one, a different church. And, I'm hanging out in the lobby of the church, and a guy walks in, young couple walks in, he and his girlfriend, and I'm a huge Indy racing fan, all right? And so I immediately notice the big target on the back of his jacket, and it says Chip Ganassi Racing, all right? So I make my way over, introduce myself to him, begin to start a conversation with him, and find out he's the fueler, all right? So two things I loved about him. One, that he worked for a race team, and two, I always am just drawn to people who don't really know God. And somewhere in the course of the conversation, he said, man, I'm like new to this whole deal. I've never really been in church, didn't even know what to wear today. And so I find out he's the fueler for Juan Pablo Montoya. I mean, he's like on the team. And I'm like, you are my new best friend today. I am so glad. You know, we crossed paths. I think this was meant to be. And you know, I hang out talking to him for a little bit. And my wife comes over, Julie comes over at some point, and, you know, makes some introductions with he and his girlfriend. And eventually they're like, well, where do we go? And it was pretty obvious to me. I mean, here's where we go to sit down. You know, it's right in front of us. And so we say, hey, why don't you come sit with us in the sanctuary? That's what we call it. We had a sanctuary. And we call it an auditorium. We said, why don't you come sit with this in the sanctuary? And so we go in, and I sit down next to my new best friend. And, you know, and I really want him to have a good church experience, right? And then suddenly I see it. I see it, the church, for what it really is. It's a church experience designed for church people. I mean, it started right off the bat. So our music director, choral, you know, music guy gets up and he does this number. We begin to sing and he puts his arms up and he starts doing this. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, I'm sure we do this every week, but I just never saw it this way before. And I turned to Shane. I'm like, dude, I don't know why he's doing this. I mean, I know it looks goofy, but he must think that even though this song's like 500 years old, that nobody knows how to sing it. So he's just like doing this. That must be why he's waving his arms at us. And I'm just like dying, you know. And then the music guy, you know, our worship guy says, we're going to next sing verses 1, 3, and 7. And I'm like, oh, I guess we don't sing all the way through like a normal person would. You know, we pick and choose how we go, and it's hard enough. I'm sorry, Shane. I knew, later this was confirmed. I knew when you work for like a race team, you pursue excellence. Like you can't make mistakes. And I found that out later. I mean, we actually had dinner with Shane and Becky one night at their home, and they had like a stainless steel sink in their kitchen. Every time he would turn the water on, he'd get a towel and he'd wipe the sink out, because you know, that's you work in a pristine environment. There can be no dust, no mess. I mean, this is the kind of guy he was, and I'm just dying sitting next to him in church, you know. I just saw it differently all of a sudden. And I could go on and on. I'm going to try to shorten this. So next was something called special music, all right? And I discovered that the special music is not that special, all right? I mean, I'd seen this for years, right? But I mean, we're sitting there, and these ladies walk up on the platform, and it's like some mother-daughter, grandmother trio or something, and they're choreographed in their dress. It's purple and black, and you know, and I'm dying. I'm just like, oh my word, and they couldn't sing. I mean, I thought I'd heard it before, but it didn't really matter, but they couldn't sing, because see, we had these hoops there you had to jump through. You had to like, to sing a special song, you had to like be in the choir. It's like you had to do one thing in order to be allowed to do another thing, and then they gave them a microphone and put it in front of their, you know, and Shane's just sitting there, right? And he just like looks at me like, what is up with this, you know? And so I didn't know what to do, right? So you know what I do? I go try to distract him. I go over, I'm like, dude, and start a conversation with him. He doesn't take on the conversation. He's just sitting there. And he's like, why would they give him a microphone when they sing so bad? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I'm ready to crawl in a hole. Right? I mean, all I want is my friend, my new friend, new best friend. I mean, I'm like really wanting to impress this guy, right? All I want is for him to see Jesus for who he really is. And we're just having like one bad experience after another. And you know, we went out to lunch with a man. They wanted to go out to lunch. I'm like, oh man, all they're going to want to do is talk about that. And it was true. I mean, we're at lunch and he just couldn't, he's just like, I couldn't understand why they gave those women microphones. I mean, he couldn't get off that, right? And so, you know, and so anyway, you know, it's interesting. I'm telling you that because it never bothered me before. All right, it never bothered me. I mean, I've been in that environment. I've seen it 100 times, but and I didn't exactly have the terminology for it, you know. But I understood that we have a culture here, and the culture is actually getting in the way of the message. I mean, the way we sing, or the way we put information up, or the way we all know how to do certain things, but nobody else. I mean, this thing gets in the way, and for Shane, I just wanted him to come to know Jesus. And so, you know, I invited him within a week or two. I mean, they kind of came back. He later said something like, you know, I became a Christian in spite of everything I experienced, you know. But, you know, I invited him to go to our student ministry. Because, you know, that was a place that I had control over. So we invited him and his girlfriend to come and kind of help with our students. And so they started hanging out with our students. We had like 35, 45, you know, junior, senior hires, a rocking band, you know, music that sounded like it was on ZPL. So, you know, even though it had Jesus words to it, it like sounded normal. And you know, there was nothing there that was going to at least consistently offend them, you know, in terms of things they don't know what to do or how to dress, because it was just, you know, that's the kind of environment it was. Other than the fact that, you know, we would say at times, hey, we're all sinners. And if that offends you, then I don't know what to do about that. But Jesus had a solution to it. I mean, we've got a way to get around the fact that we're all kind of equal on that front. But you know, it was cool because through that experience, you know, Shane and Becky eventually became Jesus followers. And right after that, they're like, you know, we think we ought to get baptized. And I mean, it was really cool to watch how they became baptized in spite of what they experienced. But I think part of it had to do with they began to see that, man, there is something connective in this one place. And you know, before long, they were like, you know, we probably ought to get married. I mean, that God would be honored if we actually, you know, bring the covenant into the relationship that we already have as we're living together. And so, you know, I say all of this because when we started Crosspoint, that experience really shaped for me what we wanted to do here. Because we said, you know, this shouldn't just be a church experience for church people. You know, I mean, we want this to be a place where you can come and the culture doesn't get in the way of actually seeing Jesus for who he really is. And, you know, we're going to do music that sounds like what you might hear on the radio. I mean, I don't know many people that listen to pipe organs when they drive to work every morning. Maybe a few, and it's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, like, worshiping that way. I mean, Paul says, hey, there's no difference. We just said, hey, we don't want that to be a barrier to people if that's a barrier. We want it to be big and fun and lights and, you know, because if the church is the vehicle, if the church is the conduit to get the message to everyone, you know, I mean, we're all late to the gate, right? I mean, we're all standing there, whether 30 seconds late or 30 minutes late, we're all late. And if the church is the conduit, then how dare we create a culture that puts an obstacle in someone's way? And so, you know, if you're kind of like Shane, my buddy, you know, at least Shane, when I first met him, and you're walking in here saying, man, you know, I've got a lot of questions. Maybe you're a seeker, a looker, we'd all like to be lookers, right? Maybe you're a looker and you're like an unchurched, dechurched, or you've had a bad, toxic church experience, you know, radioactive, whatever it might be. You know, our hope is that you can come into this place and you can take as long as you need to get your questions answered. And you know, my hope is that there's nothing at least that offends you consistently. You know, I mean, that's not to say the coffee's not going to be bad one week or better one week over the other. You might have to stand in line at check-in here or there. I may not, you know, offend you with some illustration because we'll do anything short of sinning to try to help people see Jesus, you know. That's not to say that may not happen on an occasion. But the only thing, our hope is the only thing that you are regularly offended by, if at all, is when we say, hey, we're all sinners. And you're a sinner, I'm a sinner, we all fall short. But God actually had a solution to that. And through Jesus' grace, we can actually have a right standing with God. That a right standing with God is available through Christ to everyone. To everyone. In fact, PJ is going to kind of lead us in just a moment right here. And, you know, this is really the reason right here. I mean, we're just kind of stripping everything away. And as you listen, as you sing along, whatever it might be, this is the reason right here that we actually do what we do. And so you can listen, you can sing, but I'll lead us through this, PJ. Saying, hey, we all fall short. Every single one of us, every single one of us was late to the gate. There's nothing on our own that we can stand on and say, hey, I'm worthy to get in on my own. He says, no, the only thing is the blood of Jesus. When you came in this morning, you received a bag that says, you know, I make good things happen for other people. And we kind of believe that around here. In fact, Jesus is the one that really makes good things happen. I'm going to ask you to take this bag out. Inside are some crackers, a little thing of juice. Just take those out, hold them in your hands. You know, one of the normal things the church has been doing for hundreds of years, for thousands of years, is for people who have been following hard after the heart of God, is this thing called the Eucharist, this thing called the Holy Communion, this thing called the Mass, the Lord's Supper. You know, some of us are like, oh, it's called this, no, it's called that. No, Paul's like, I don't care, it's all the same thing, there's no difference. Doesn't matter what tradition you come from, it's the same thing. The point is, we were late to the gate. And Jesus, right before he went to the cross, he was actually having a meal with his closest friends. And while he was in the middle of this meal, he just took the common bread off the table. If he were here, I think he would have been at Skyline. I think he would have just grabbed the crackers. I'm pretty confident. And he took some of the beverage that was on the table, wine. We're in a school, so this is grape juice, all right? And so, you know, he took something very common and he began to make these spiritual connects to these very common things. In fact, here's what he said. It says, while they were eating, Jesus took the bread, and when he had given thanks for it, he broke it, and he gave it to his disciples, saying, take and eat. This is my body. He said, hey, I'm doing something for you. My body's about to be broken for you. He said, you know, this is called the great redemption right here, the great buyback program. You've got all kinds of sin on your back. I actually came, I took my card out, and I said, God, I'm going to buy them all back. Here's the payment right here. I'm going to have a transaction right here. My body's going to be broken so that you can be free. Then he went on. He took the beverage off the table, and it says he took a cup, and when he'd given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. Now, this always was confusing, because I'd look at this, and I'd be like, what do you mean many? I mean, didn't Jesus did this for everyone? That's why every single one of us are holding this in our hands. Whether you believe or not, you're holding this in your hands. And what I later came to understand was that he said, this is for many, because he said, yeah, I did this for everyone. But only many would experience it, because while it's free and while it's in your hands, you have to choose. You have to choose to receive the grace that comes through my blood, through my forgiveness. And so he says, there will be many while it was for everyone. I mean, how dare we put an obstacle in the way that keeps us out of the hands of everybody, but at the same point, only many will choose to engage in this. And so in a few moments, we're going to invite you to share in the bread, to share in the cup. And this is for people. Here's the unique thing. This is for people who are in relationship with Jesus. This is for those of you who are in relationship. He said, those of you who are in relationship, you share the bread and the cup to celebrate the relationship. But see, here's the cool part, because remember, it was for everybody. And so, but the thing is you're holding this in your hands too. So if you've not began a relationship with Jesus, but you are at the point of saying, I'm ready to, then make this your first communion. In a moment when we pray, just, you know, pray that short little prayer. God, I ask you to forgive me. I mean, I'm a sinner. We've all sinned. I mean, I'm one of them. You know, bring forgiveness and grace into my life. Help me to begin to follow you. I mean, pray that prayer. Begin a relationship with Jesus and make this your first communion. He said it's for everyone. And if you aren't at that point, that's cool. We hope you get to that point at some point, but I want you to know that you can just hold this in your hands. You can just hold it. You can take this home. I mean, this doesn't have to happen here. It can happen next to your bed tonight. It can happen on your way to work tomorrow. You can listen to this podcast and be driving down the road, you know, having communion. Take one to your spouse if they're not here. You know, if you're having a family gathering, share communion. Take some bags when you leave today, because this isn't something that has to happen here. It's for everyone, everywhere, when we believe. Let's pray. God, I thank you for this message, this timeless, this thing that you did, this huge thing you did in the first century that wasn't just confined to that Middle Eastern culture. It wasn't just for the Jews, just for the Gentiles, just for those who were right with you because of their own goodness. But you said, hey, this is for everyone, because we're all in the same boat. We're all on an equal playing field because all of us have sinned. Every single one of us showed up late to the gate and you came in and said, let them all in. They don't deserve it. They were all late. It doesn't matter if they were 10 seconds late or, you know, a decade late. They were all late. I want you to let them all in. And you did the great buyback, God. You made a transaction and you said, hey, I'm gonna redeem them. I'm gonna take that redemption ticket off of their back because they've been sold into sin. And I'm gonna buy them back because I want to know them. I want to love on them. So God, we just celebrate this. And God, this is why we do what we do every single week, that we can make this available to every single person that's ready and willing to receive. Thank you for your great provision, for your great love, as we think that, man, what an amazing thing you did 2,000 years ago. Amen. As you open your eyes, you know, there's a number of ways to respond in these next moments. If you are in relationship with Jesus, feel free to open the crackers and eat the bread, take the juice. You know, if you are beginning a relationship with Jesus, make this your first communion. We'd love for you to record that on your card as a next step. If you're starting a relationship with Jesus, say, let us know. We want to celebrate that. Or maybe you're somebody who, you know, says, man, I'm just not there yet. I still got questions, so I'm not going to take this, you know, but I'm going to continue to come back and see if God does something in my life. Man, that's a good response as well. All right, but just, you know, over these next moments as PJ plays, take a few moments to respond, to share in the bread and the cup if you'd like, and then we're going to sing.